Who are you?
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zata Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Belvieu, Houston. Time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
The 0-1. Up the middle. And through for a base hit. Paredes leads off with a single, and that'll do it on the no-hitter for Gerrit Cole.
Oh, you hate to see it. Oh, poor Gerrit Cole. No no-hitter for him and the New York Yankees. What's up? It's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Josh Bearden for Vanessa Richardson one more time. And Josh, this is, I think, the most important stretch of the season for the Houston Astros. Over the next 9 games, they will play the New York Mets 4 times. They will play the New York Yankees, who have Gerrit Cole, 5 times. 6 of those games will be on the road. I'm excited. A little nervous.
Are you really? I'm not excited about this at all. I'm worried.
You're not?
I'm worried.
Worried?
Yeah, I'm worried. Look, I think that there have been some really good things that they've done this last month, but there's been some really disappointing games and some disappointing moments.
Talking about the Astros.
Yeah, the Astros. I am worried that they're going to kind of falter a little bit more, a little bit during this stretch.
What concerns you the most right now?
Honestly, the bats. The bats concern me the most going against these teams. All of these teams have great pitching, and it's like going against the Mets, I don't think it'll be too terrible because they're hitting them at the right time. But look, I don't feel great about a JV Cole outing on Saturday. And you know, the crazy thing is the last couple of outings that we've seen from Gerrit Cole, one has been really good. One was an abject failure, just really bad. I just don't see him going against the Astros and not using some kind of tack on his fingers, ooh, but B, also just going out there and just dealing. And so I'm just concerned. It's the pessimist in me. Like, we talked about this yesterday. I'm a more pessimistic fan when it comes to things. I would rather be pessimistic and pleasantly surprised than I would get my hopes up and be disappointed. I'm just worried that the bats go cold during this entire run, during this entire stretch.
The bats just haven't been hot enough for my liking all year. And far be it from me to say that my very awesome boo thing has perhaps let herself go just a little bit, talking about the Astros, and we all know that I have an open relationship with the Astros and the Mariners, but I'm a lot closer with the Astros. It's a little weird, but they have, if we're going to talk about it from that perspective, I don't know, gained like 10 pounds. It's not so noticeable to the point where you're saying, hey, babe, you need to go to the gym tomorrow.
Would you say that to a significant?
Okay, I would never ever do that.
I just need
that.
To know. No. Like, that's just for my peace of mind. I need to know that you would never actually say that.
But
to
say
a significant
I was a terrible 22-year-old version of myself, the thought would go through my mind, and perhaps I would say it. I don't know. I know better than to say something like that, but since we are talking about a baseball team and not an actual significant other, they have at the plate
put on a few pounds. It's more like a friend. Right, like you could look at me like 5 years ago, me, and look at me now and know, Josh, like, come on, man, what are you doing? Like, are you just eating Oreos all that? Like, and you would tell me without
the Oreos are good.
Without, yeah, they are, but they've made me fat. Right, like car eating Panda Express before I go eat dinner is not a good habit to have. Right,
no.
So you as a friend, like I feel comfortable with you being like, dude, you've put on a little weight. Is everything okay? You can say that to a friend if you're starting to get concerned about
them.
This
is true.
That's what it's like with the Astros.
I actually have a friend who I have done that to, and then a year later, he got mad at me for not having said that to him, and I was like, wait, no. I said that to you.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I get mad at everybody who tells me. Like, I've had my daughter has secretly tricked me into working out and losing weight. She's like, I just want to get good at lifting. She's like a 13-year-old girl. I'm like, okay, I'll go teach you. Now all of a sudden I've dropped a bunch of weight and I'm back in the weight room.
Good,
I'm like,
though.
Wow.
That's good.
She's manipulative. I gotta watch out for her.
If only it were that simple for some of these Astros bats. And that's what I'm wondering. So look, to draw a grand sweeping conclusion from this 9-game stretch that the Astros have coming up. 6 on the road, 5 of them against the Yankees with a weird 1-game series at the end, 4 of them against the Mets. Things can change between now and the end of the year.
But this is, I think, going to give me a much better gauge of what they can do the rest of the way. Because I do think these are two of the toughest teams that they will play all year. And you, of course, haven't seen the Astros play the Yankees to this point already this season because of what we saw at the beginning of the year where you had a couple of the series delayed due to the whole lockout thing. So what I'm looking for, Josh, over this stretch, and I think your worries are very valid. I'm looking for a couple of different things. But specifically, Alex Bregman and Yuli Gurriel, let's just isolate this nine-game sample size. I need to see slugging numbers that are at the very least similar to the average on this team, if not back to some of the levels that we saw last year. And I think a nine-game sample size is a perfect amount of time to really get a feel for if these guys still have that big game chutzpah, if you will.
Chutzpah.
And I wonder, though. And with Gurriel, it's understandable, and I'm not even, like, upset. Because, I mean, he just played the best season of his career last year where he won a gold glove, he won the batting title, and what, he's 37 years old?
Yeah.
But Bregman...
I have my thoughts on Bregman that a lot of people in this city probably wouldn't like. I think I'm a big... I'll just say this. I'm a big fan of moving on from assets when they're still at their peak value before their value drops.
You're like a wannabe Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I'm a wannabe Bill Belichick, for sure. But with Yuli, like, we've always had questions about Yuli since, like, he's older coming into the team. How much is he going to be able to produce? Then he starts producing at a high level, and you're like, wow, like, this is fool's gold right now. There's no way this can last. It's lasted. Now he's older, and he's starting to fall off. He's had a great career. I can't even be mad at him.
Ironically, he's in better shape now than he was last year.
Right.
Too.
Yeah, he is.
We talking about shape for the first 5 minutes of this segment.
Talking about something that I would love, you know, obviously I'm concerned about the bats. I think I'm going to continue to be concerned about the bats for the rest of the season. Here's what I want to see through this stretch. I want to see a bend but don't break attitude from the entire pitching staff. That's what I want to see. I don't want to see any moments where the bullpen struggles and really falls apart out of nowhere. I want to see this pitching staff, the starters, the bullpen, from the first inning to the ninth inning, go out and deal the way they have all season. I don't want to see any kind of yips come out through this entire stretch. I don't want to see any of these guys. I don't want to see anybody start to fall off and falter. We've already seen like a couple of iffy outings from JV. And what I want to see is I want to see that consistency, that consistently dominant performance from all of these. And it's tough because a lot of guys are banged up. They've had a lot of injuries, especially in the bullpen. But that's what I want to see, because I feel like if you can make it through this stretch and not have your pitching staff disappear, right, and not have your pitching staff mess, I feel like that's a better indicator for long-term success. Because at some point, I expect these bats to turn back on. Right. At some point, I expect these Astros to go on a hot streak when they're coming up to the plate. But consistency at the mound, that's way more important to me during the stretch than anything else, because that bodes well when we get to the playoffs and later on in the season.
By that same logic, you expect the bats to get better. I do expect the pitching to come back to earth a little bit.
Yeah.
But you're looking for pitching consistency. I am looking specifically at Alex Bregman and Yuli Gurriel. It is Vanessa and Galan, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. What do you want to see over this nine-game stretch? And honestly, if you're telling me that it's not one of the most important stretches of the year or isn't the most important stretch of the year, I think you're crazy. It's nine games in a row against two of the best teams in baseball this season. Josh Beard is sitting in for Vanessa Richardson. I am Paul Galan. Earlier today on the bench with John Granato, Lance Zierlein, there is some audio that needs to be played because it actually relates to one of the teams that the Astros is about to play. No, not the Mets. We're talking about the New York Yankees. Ryan Spader is an MLB analyst, and he joined the bench. And I don't know why this was on his mind, but I'm really just fascinated by how he answered a question asked by John.
If they don't win it this year, though, I can certainly say, especially with the Judge situation, right? How do you see that Judge contract situation playing out?
So I don't know if you guys have seen some of the things that have been put out on Twitter. Now, look, I'm a firm believer that the Astros were not the only team to do it in 2017 or 2018, whatever the hell.
2017, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a firm believer that that's not the case. I'm also a firm believer that the Yankees this year may be seeing different baseballs. than the rest of Major League Baseball. I mean, we got Judge with 25 homers. We have Rizzo with 18 homers. I'm sorry, but I'm throwing up a big question mark there.
Well, and Matt Carpenter's 6 home runs in 8 hits. Out of his 8 hits, 6 of them are home runs.
It's all a little bit, you know, it deserves to be questioned.
I'm lost. First off, hey, we asked you about Aaron Judge's future.
By
Yankees
the way,
are cheating. What? Second off, is that even possible? I don't know enough, I guess, about the handling of balls in baseball.
Right.
I know in football, obviously, with the whole Deflategate thing, that footballs can be tampered with. Is this actually possible?
Yeah.
With baseball? No, but I need a little more from Spader, don't you? This doesn't
definitely
seem like a... And I would love to hear that the Yankees are cheating. But what? This came out of nowhere.
It's so out of left field. Like, he just jumps in with it. He's like...
What's Aaron Judge's future? The Yankees are cheating.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, he's pretty much like, I know you want to hear about Aaron Judge right now, but we got to talk about these balls. Like, they can, you absolutely can mess with the balls. It depends on the amount of... Like, even the amount of stitching can change how hitters hit the ball, how pitchers throw the ball.
And they have those
cord material,
some ballparks.
Yeah, exactly. Like, some of the guys have talked about the balls this year. It's like hitting a roll of wet socks. That's what it's like hitting the ball this year versus the ball last year. They can absolutely juice the balls and change them up. And so if they have – this is a huge like kind of – it's not really an accusation. It's more of like – it's more like whenever I'm like, I wonder if my son's waking up in the middle of the night and playing video games while we're all asleep. I don't have any proof, but I feel like it's happening. That's what it feels like from Ryan Spader. Like, he's kind of just like – it is a little suspect that these guys are hitting home runs at the rate that they're hitting it. But now that I've heard him say it, now I need to know. I want to know more. I want to look farther into this.
Josh Beard's in for Vanessa Richardson. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Sean Mapes is behind the glass. There's more from Ryan Spader. I mean, if you haven't already, you're not here hook, line, and sinker. I don't know what to tell you. More from Ryan Spader on the Yankees, who I guess are cheating by messing with the baseballs like they're Tom Brady, allegedly, with Deflategate. Vanessa would be having a field day with that right now. Thank God she's not here just in that specific part, but she'll be back tomorrow. It is Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN Radio, 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Josh Beard sitting in for Vanessa. She will be back tomorrow. So Ryan Spader, who is the co-author of a book called Incredible Baseball Stats, and per his Twitter description, does a lot of different things. MLB analyst, author, host, statistician, writer, retired senior hedge fund account manager, Penn State alum, Hoya. That's a terrible combination of colleges as far as insufferable people. Marine Corps veteran, Semper Fi fund supporter.
Whoa! Did you just say Semper Fi?
Semper Fi.
Literally every Marine in the Houston area is cringing right now and going to come find you.
I just read what's in front of me.
Semper Fi.
Semper Fi.
Yeah, Semper Fi.
Did you think it was a frat or something?
Yes.
Or like you just think SoFi or something like that.
It's the most elite fraternity. The Marine.
Oh, okay.
Well, let's move away. Right.
Yeah, you did. You did.
I've seen enough of their commercials.
You struggled to get there, though. Like, that's the disappointing part.
Those commercials are all over the place. And now there's the one that they're showing. There's this guy, and he's walking through like a street that's randomly. There's a lot of rain going on it, and he sees a digital version of himself, and then he punches through it, and he wakes up, and he's in boot camp, and he's like, yeah, this is where I want to be.
It's actually how all Marines end up in boot camp. They just punch digital versions of themselves, and then all of a sudden they wake up, and they're there.
Yep.
Marines, I love y'all, but y'all are crazy people. Like, they're the one branch.
I didn't say this.
No, it's in a good way.
He was the one that got mad at me for the best thing I was saying.
A, I'm a veteran. I'm allowed to say it. B, they all know what I'm talking about, like, in a really good way. But, like, Marines were the one group that I wouldn't mess with. Like, I had no problem talking crap to Army, Navy,
okay,
of course.
Okay.
But Marines, no.
Okay.
No, I didn't do that.
And you're an Air Force veteran.
Yeah, I didn't want them to map me into the ground is what I didn't want.
I am a Call of Duty and Battlefield veteran.
Nope. Nope, that's you can't do that.
That's not stolen valor.
It's okay? A little stolen valor.
Anyway, Ryan Spader was on the bench earlier this morning, and he made some very, very random accusations against the New York Yankees. Here is more of Ryan Spader.
We should probably look at this stuff at a different angle. Maybe look at the percentage of baseballs hit by the Yankees that have between, I don't know, a 30 and a 33 degree launch angle and 105 mile per hour exit velocity, and compare that to the rest of the league. I think it should all be questioned at this point. I'm not personally somebody who's, you know, big into conspiracy theories or anything like that, but I think in this case we can look at the Yankees and say, you know, maybe something's a little bit different with them than compared to the rest of the league.
Now, hearing that, let's try to dissect it and assume that Ryan Spader is not someone who is a conspiracy theorist.
I want to preface this with my thoughts on Ryan Spader, just real quickly. Ryan Spader's also the guy who went out and tried to prove a lot of other teams were cheating, to try to corroborate a lot of the feelings that Astros fans had, that the Astros themselves had, and kind of railed against, like, hey, it's not just them, it's everybody else. And then when he had a lot of pushback, he apologized profusely and retracted everything he said. So I already have issues with Ryan Spader in general because he went out and said, oh, all these teams are also doing all these things. It was all over Twitter. It got really, really big. He got a lot of pushback from other teams, from other fan bases. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, guys. You know, maybe some of my information wasn't completely correct. So I want to preface this with, like, I have my thoughts on Ryan Spader. I think he is a massive conspiracy theorist. Like, I think he's I'm not a real big conspiracy theorist. I think he's a huge conspiracy theorist. But this is one conspiracy I am ready to ride or die on.
Yes, absolutely. I think we all are, right? How much of a burden of proof do we really need?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. So just go on StatCast and look up exit velocity and launch angle?
Yeah. Yeah, didn't Aaron Judge have one, like, exit velocity of, like, 116 or 117 last week?
That's ridiculous.
I think if you just go to, like, the all-time or, like, this season's, like, exit velocity leaders, it's, like, all Yankees.
Yeah.
It's all Yankees. So that's all the
– okay.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist either, but that's all I need to
I'm
know.
Full – I'm going – give me my tinfoil hat. I'm going full conspiracy. Oh, you're going to sit there and tell me that Rob Manfred – we know he's a Yankees
That's
fan.
True. We do know that.
Yankees fan commissioner of the league isn't helping his favorite team with a different set of balls. Manfred's giving the Yankees his balls all the time. Like, it's a different set that they're using than the rest of the league.
He likes to wash them.
Yeah.
So how does this work is what I'm wondering. Because you would think that there would be some sort of process that the league can do before any given game to make sure that this would never happen.
I think?
Feel like it would be a lot easier with baseballs than it would be with footballs, but maybe I'm dumb for thinking that, because I'm just thinking about how on a football sideline, they are so big, there is so much space, there are so many footballs on a sideline. I can understand how the Deflategate thing actually happened without any oversight or something like that. I guess with baseballs, seeing as they're smaller, it would be easier to screw with them, but it also seems like it would have to be a pretty exact scientific process to have it in a way where, for the Yankees, things are so much better than for every other team across baseball.
Here's where the difficulty is. Like, obviously, it'd be way easier in football to switch balls out after they've been checked. But the actual checking process for a baseball, I mean, it's way other than like how far the laces are coming off of the ball. I think it's almost impossible to try to figure out how tightly wound the ball is on the inside without, like, cutting it open. I guess there's some way
they
could
do
it.
Would be.
But it's like, oh, what are you going to do? You're going to feel it? You'll be like, well, this ball feels slightly less hard.
Squeeze it like it's an avocado, avocado or a tomato.
This one's ripe. This ball's very ripe, so we're going to use the not ripe one.
I always go with the, like, extra firm avocados, too, because they last longer. I'll forget that I have them.
Yeah, you're crazy. I like making guacamole, so I always go with, like, the perfectly ripe ones so you can actually – have you ever tried to make guacamole with a hard avocado?
No, I haven't.
It's impossible.
No.
You don't make good guacamole with it.
I would assume not, because you'd have to mash it.
You know
somehow.
How to make guacamole? I'm going to teach you. That's what we're doing during the break. Let's go back to baseball. My mom I'm going to teach you how to make guacamole.
Used to make me guacamole.
I'm going to teach you how to make guacamole.
It's good. But no, so what I do is like a crazy person. I will get the avocado. I put sriracha sauce in it, and I eat it with a spoon. Like,
oh, that's
ice
not
cream.
Bad. Yeah, that's good. I like salt and pepper. I've done
salt and pepper.
Sriracha
okay,
before,
so you've done it too. Yeah. Okay, I'm not crazy for doing that.
No. You're crazy, but you're not crazy for doing that.
Are we as crazy as Ryan Spader?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I'm on board with this. I will ride or die with Ryan Spader on this.
I want.
What more do you need?
But legitimately, anything other than the exit velocities are weird. There has to be more than that, because to me, I'm just trying really hard to think of how you could actually mess with a baseball other than bringing your own baseballs and having your own, I guess, counterfeit baseball operation.
Right.
And that just seems like it would be such a massive pain in the ass to do.
I don't think it would be at all. I think it would literally be, okay, we have these juice balls. We know we can make these juice balls. We can get Rawlings to make these juice. Look, people have their theories about last season where the balls were a little bit softer for the first half of the season last year, and then all of a sudden they got juiced for the second half. You don't think that Manfred has Rawlings like, hey, let's make some of those extra juice balls, and then it'd be so easy if he can get the supply to be able to get them to the Yankees, somehow be able to work them in. You don't think the umpires are a part of this? Let's not act like the umpires in the MLB are above board this season. Let's not act like they're the greatest referees and umpires we've ever seen.
A controversial take on this show, but I'm a big fan of the show Pony Umpires. I think that they are great for baseball, because baseball's regular season are long, slow, arduous, boring monstrosities. They're like Zack Snyder movies.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. You just have to watch all 7 hours. You'll get it that way.
Yeah, I'm full on in this conspiracy theory, though. Like, it's the big baseball is a part of this. The umpire union is a part of this. There is a full on. The lizard people are definitely involved in this. They're the ones that are distributing the juice balls to the Yankees. There is a whole
what are the
conglomerate.
Bronx think about the balls?
They're all in cahoots.
They're turning
together.
The balls gay. Not possible, Alex Jones. Please calm down. Just, get away from the mic. Thank you. This is actually an interesting theory on twitch.tv/ESPN975 from Pinche Pancho Villa. They kept a stash of the juiced balls from seasons back, bringing them now out at opportune times.
Yeah.
That, to me, actually could be possible.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, too, the players and the pitchers, they all seem to be unaware of when the balls were changed, other than, hey, these balls feel different. Because baseball seemed to just randomly do it without giving any notice to the rest of the league. So I don't know how you would know which balls are juiced and which ones aren't unless you're, again, doing the tomato method.
Unless you – well, look, if you're a part of the Bulluminati, then you definitely know. Like, you have a special section where you're keeping the juice balls. And the Bulluminati – like, a regular person wouldn't know. You'd have to have them sectioned off and cordoned off in a specific part of Yankee Stadium. And the Bulluminati makes sure that the juice balls get to the pitchers when they need to be out there, and the umpires are a part of it.
And then, so baseball's already set up a situation where, yeah, sometimes the balls are just different. Year to year, sometimes the balls are just different. So now they've conditioned the pitchers to be like, oh, when I go to Yankee Stadium, the balls are just different. I don't know. MLB always, you know, they can't keep a handle on their balls. So I also made a funny hand gesture with that.
Yeah, that's why I laugh.
I just realized that. But so that you condition to where, like, balls are kind of random, and no one thinks about no, and no one plays all their games in Yankee Stadium except for the Yankees, or they play half.
See, and that's where it gets even trickier, because you would think that, okay, well, couldn't some of these be getting out so the other team is dealing with them, or like, because,
well, Garrett Cole
they
gave up a million
balls.
Home runs 2 weeks ago.
They replace balls all the time.
Right, but the umpire does.
Right? Yeah, that's why I think the umpires are part.
The team doesn't give it to the umpire, does it? I'm assuming that baseball has some person there that is giving the bag of balls to the umpire.
Right, and then you don't think it would be easy for, like, okay, so like Rob Manfred, if like the head of the ball mafia, right? He's handing the ball bag over to the ball boy, and he's got like a special ball boy that he's hired. He's being like, look, if you do this favor for me, don't worry. I'm going to make sure your family's very well taken care of.
Those sound very New York.
And then the ball boy takes the balls to the umpire, and those are the ones that he uses. And the umpire doesn't ask any questions because they've already slipped a $20 bill to him under the table behind the scenes.
Just a $20 bill in their pocket.
That's true.
Where they have their scorecard.
Sorry, with inflation, $40.
Yeah,
$40.
That's all it takes to win Angel Hernandez's honor.
Give him an Exxon gas card, and then he's bought off for the rest of the game.
Yeah, well, look, everybody in baseball is so old school, you could just slip them 20 cents and they could go see a movie for it.
713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. It's an interesting theory, that's for sure, Ryan Spader. Thank you for giving us something to talk about on this June 21st of 2022, a Tuesday. Josh Beard sitting in for Vanessa Richardson. If you have an actual theory that sounds a lot better than what Ryan Spader floated, please have at it. Like, work it together. Please bring it to the table by the end of the show. Up next, our countdown to the start of the NFL season continues. We're at 80. So that means that we're going to talk about wide receivers, specifically one wide receiver who done lost his mind. You'll hear from him next.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Josh Beard sitting in for Vanessa. She'll be back tomorrow. I am Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes is behind the glass. And earlier today on the bench, Ryan Spader, an MLB analyst, suggested that perhaps the Yankees are up to something this season. What are they up to? Well, Spader's theory is that they may be using different baseballs. Interesting theory. And you know what? We don't like the Yankees, so screw it. We'll just entertain it. We're not endorsing it, per se. We're not saying it's a fact. We don't have the data. We don't have the science. But we're not saying no to it right away either, even though there's very little evidence that Spader provided. We do have a phone call, 713-780-3776. Donald wants to talk about balls. Donald.
Yes.
What's going on?
Hello?
We're here.
Yeah. What I want to say about the balls, Spalding's the only one who makes the balls for the Major League, right?
Rawlings, yes.
All right. Don't the Major League own that?
I think they do. If I'm not mistaken, I believe that they do, because there was some uproar over the last couple of years about how baseball now actually owns the company. They do own it. Okay, Donald, where are we going with this?
Well, I mean, they have to be in on it if there's some kind of juicing going on with the ball.
I like that logic. Step one, step two, baseball's also involved. I like it, Donald. Baseball's out to get the Astros and out to help the Yankees out because they haven't won a World Series since 2009. You give us the gasoline, I will pour the fire on top of it and appreciate the phone call. I like that. Baseball also in on it per Donald, which is piggybacking off of per Ryan Spader, the Yankees having different baseballs. Allegedly. See, we said allegedly once per segment. We're good. This is not libel. This is not slander, Josh
right.
Beard.
They can't sue us.
Right. Because we said allegedly once.
Allegedly, I believe this.
Allegedly.
That's right. Did I use allegedly correctly?
You did.
I allegedly believe this.
I allegedly believe this.
Yeah.
That was told to us allegedly. That actually was said.
Ryan Spader, actually was said, yes.
That wasn't allegedly said. Ryan Spader did suggest it. But he didn't go all in with it.
I'm actually going to dive into this. I actually want to dive into the Yankees numbers specifically at Yankee Stadium. Like, okay. You know how weird I get with stuff and how intense I get?
When you come back, you're going to be like Charlie Day with the Pepe Sylvia chart from Always Sunny in Philadelphia on Thursday.
I'm going to have a cigarette in my mouth. I'm like, all right, listen, Vanessa, here's what's going on. This is what I'm seeing from the Yankees. The exit velocity's through the roof. That's the number one. And, like, it's just going to be me, like, pointing all over the place.
Like,
Sean's going to have to tackle me and pin me down. I'm going to be like, there's a conspiracy, guys. It's going to be awful.
All right. So we are 80 days away, guys, from the kickoff of the NFL season. 80. We're still pretty far away. And there's also still not a whole lot happening. But hey, remember Jerry Rice? He did this once.
Is trailing him. And they're going to go his way. And he's got it. The record.
He did it.
Rice is just unstoppable.
Weird to hear Al Michaels' voice on anything from way back in the day, because you think, oh yeah, he was calling things for at least 15 years before that, with the Miracle on Ice being in 1980. But that was when Jerry Rice broke Jim Brown's record for total touchdowns. And that was in 1994. He played several more years after that. Remember, he was playing in a Super Bowl with the Oakland Raiders in 2002, which is nearly a decade later. Incredible career.
Dude, the sad thing is I didn't really start watching football until the tail end of his career, right? Like, I didn't really start focusing on football until, like, 97, 98. I was, like, a little past 10. I actually started to care a little bit more. I wish I could have watched him in his heyday. I wish I could have watched him, the highlights of his career.
I went on YouTube, and there's, like, a 14-minute just video, and it's, I think, all of his touchdowns. And there's, a 5-minute video on YouTube of all his 50-yard touchdowns.
It's wild.
Which is also crazy considering what his 40 time was coming out of college. Like, it wasn't very impressive. But and look, there is this guy that was coming from was it Mississippi Valley State, a small school that was not playing at the Division I level. And then this guy just comes onto the scene and glides past everybody. And he was so much faster, despite not looking like he ever was, like, that fast. It's interesting. I would be very curious to see, like, if both of them were running a go route, Randy Moss and Jerry Rice, how would that actually look? Because Rice and Moss, we've never seen them run side to side together. And Moss, everyone assumes, was like the fastest wide receiver that we have ever seen. But would Jerry Rice be able to catch up with him? I've always wondered that.
Well, I feel like there are similarities. I don't think Jerry Rice in just a straight speed would be able to catch up with Randy Moss. But what Jerry Rice did so well was just tricking corners and tricking secondaries off the line of scrimmage. So then you combine his speed with his ability to get separation.
Separation's ridiculous.
He'd do these little, like, hip movements and stuff off the line that you just can't teach kids anymore. Wiggle. These, like, little drop routes or those little wiggles and stuff. And nobody in the NFL can repeat. I think the only guy in our generation, right? I'm a little older than you. I'm an old man. I just turned 36. We have, like, this generation. Yeah,
stop
I don't.
With that.
We have this generation of receivers where I think we've seen some really good receivers, but something's gone wrong with them. Like, DeAndre Hopkins got traded, and then all of a sudden he's in trouble for PEDs. Julio Jones just fell off a cliff. Antonio Brown started getting in a lot of trouble. The one that's the most disappointing for me is Megatron. Calvin Johnson probably could have been a guy who could have gone up there at the top of the list, possibly with Jerry Rice, and done some pretty amazing things had he played a few more years, retired early. And we just I don't know that we'll ever see a guy like Jerry Rice again, or it's going to be a real long time.
I've always felt that of all the receivers I've seen, the one that looks the most similar to him is Antonio Brown, just because of the effortless way with which he runs and the separation he creates. It's despite probably not being the absolute fastest guy out there. But, as you said, Antonio Brown, some issues, if you will.
Well, another guy, and maybe this is a guy who could be like that. When you talk about effortless, who just kind of makes plays, makes guys miss, and he just looks like he floats when he's running, is Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, in his rookie season, he had some plays that looked very Jerry Rice-esque with the way he played. But it's incredible to go back and watch him. And I think sometimes people forget just how good he was.
Right, but you know, we talk about Jerry Rice and Randy Moss.
Right.
They're not Chase Claypool. Here's Chase Claypool on the I Am Athlete podcast.
I know for a fact I am not like the rest of the guys in the NFL.
Talk. Yeah.
I know I'm a top 5 receiver. Yeah. I know I'm a top 3 receiver.
Yeah.
I'm
Keep going. Keep going.
You know, I just got to prove to people. Right? When I'm working, I'm like, oh, you know what I'm saying? I'm a dog.
Okay. Chase Claypool, a dog.
Yeah, he forgot the second part of that on the Steelers. I know I'm a top 5 receiver on the Steelers. I know I'm a top 3 receiver on the Steelers. He can't be serious. Like, he had to have just forgotten
that,
right?
He's a top 50 wide receiver. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's for sure.
He definitely is. He's a good player. I have a question, and we can answer this on the other side. Because we hear players do this all the time. We heard James Harden once say he's the best player in basketball. Clearly, he's out of his bleeping mind.
Right.
However, are you supposed to have this mentality? You're an athlete. You're supposed to be confident. Are you supposed to be thinking to yourself as a professional athlete? And this is, listen, for most people listening, they'll never be one. I've never been one. You've never been one. Sean's never been one. Is this the mentality that if we were, say, super athletic freaks? Is that the attitude that we're supposed to have? You get to answer that. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. It's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. But first, I got to tell you about my friends at the Passive Investor Network. If you are looking to, you know, invest in something, well, there ain't a lot of good things to invest in these days. But real estate, that's the gift that keeps on giving, it seems. And look, my friends at the Passive Investor Network, they look around town to find the areas that are going to be the next happening spot. And they want to help get you in on the ground floor with a personalized five-year plan for you. You want to meet with them, talk with them, and they'll walk you through the process. And I know it probably sounds intimidating, especially with things being as expensive as they are right now. I know that especially now, too, you're probably wondering, well, hey, I mean, can I even afford this right now? And that's why you got to meet with them. They will walk you through a five-year plan so you and your family can accrue real wealth through real estate. It's the Passive Investor Network, passiveinvestor.net. Promo code ESPN to go on their bus tour and see all these neighborhoods that they go into. They turn around. Passiveinvestor.net. Promo code ESPN. It's the Passive Investor Network.
ESPN. 97.5. Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Josh Beard in for Vanessa again. On God, no cap, Chase Claypool. Top five wide receiver? No, a top three wide receiver. He said this on the I Am Athlete podcast, and it has me wondering if this is the mentality that athletes are supposed to have. Because you don't want them saying, actually, I'm like wide receiver number 92. You don't want that. But that would probably be a more realistic version of what he just said on that podcast, which he was gassed up to say clearly by a very enthusiastic room of ex-athletes featuring Brandon Marshall and others.
I don't like that. I want confidence. I agree with you. Like, you don't want a guy who's been like, well, I might be an okay receiver one day. Like, you don't want a guy that's like that. But I don't like this kind of like unrealistic chest bumping mentality. It's there's nothingness. It's fake tough guy mentality. I don't want like I'm top three. You haven't put up top three numbers. When you put up top five, top three numbers, if you're on the cusp, if you're around there, then you could start saying things like that. You could say, you want to know why I don't like it?
Why?
Because it makes me think that Chase Claypool believes he's at the top of his game. And when people start to think they're at the top of their game, they get complacent. They start to whine. They start to pout. And people aren't hungry when they feel like they're at the top of their game. I want him to at least be realistic and be like, you know what? I think I could be there. I'm not there yet, but you know, I'm going to put in the work and I'm going to work my butt off to get to that point. That's why I don't like that just random, stupid chest bumping on a podcast like that, because I don't think it's setting realistic expectations and goals.
He played 15 of a possible 17 games last year, 59 catches on 105 targets, 860 yards, 2 touchdown receptions. Now, his rookie year with Pittsburgh, he had 11 total touchdowns.
Yeah.
He had 9 catching. He had 2 rushing. You see that and you think to yourself, okay, I mean, that's pretty good for a rookie year, but you did not make really any
right
year 1 to year 2 jump, which is supposedly when wide receivers are supposed to have the biggest jump.
In fairness, he had noodle arm Ben Roethlisberger throwing him the ball in
that
his final
true.
Season. So
that
there,
is true.
I'll at least give him that. And I think Chase Claypool has some really nice traits about him. He's big. He's speedy. He's rangy. He's a great high point receiver. There's a lot to like about Chase Claypool, but it also looked like he got into his own way a lot last season. He dropped the ball a lot. He was complaining a lot whenever the ball wasn't coming his way. And I really feel like it makes sense that he would go on a podcast and say, oh, I'm top five. I think I'm top three, because he thinks he's there, but he's not there. He's competing with some of the let's take top five right now. Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, Deebo Samuel. That's just off the top of my head. I could name five other guys that I would put in a top five above Chase Claypool and five others after that.
Just go to ESPN.com and look at statistics and read off name after name after name until you see
Chase. I don't even
Chase.
Need to look at statistics. I'm just going to look off a pure talent, size, ability when you watch them. I'm eyeball guy. I'm not going to be stats Josh today. I'm not going to be analytics Josh today. I'm going to be the eyeball test. I could just look at those guys and say, okay, they perform at a higher level than Chase Claypool does. I do think that Chase Claypool has a physical skill set to get himself to that point, but I really don't. I have friends that are Pittsburgh fans. I have friends in the Pittsburgh organization, and there have been questions about Chase Claypool's mentality since his rookie year. They think that he had too much success too early, and it got to him.
On God,
on what pushing?
That sounds for real.
But Chase Claypool is not pushing P, and that's what he needs to be doing. 100.
He's not mid.
Yeah, he's not mid.
But he's not bussing either.
No, that's true, Sean Mapes behind the glass.
Okay, I have to be done now. It's been great, guys. Have a great show. I appreciate it. I can't now. The Gen Z talk is too much.
E315702 says, trade request in a month? Yes.
Yeah,
that does seem very likely because that's the next step. Because he is a top three wide receiver, and what's next? Oh, he's going to want to get paid like one. When guys like DK Metcalf aren't getting extensions, and guys like A.J. Brown are getting traded before they get extensions.
Well, and then you have the Christian Kirk contract that completely ruined the wide receiver market
in general.
You know what?
Christian Kirk could probably say, yeah. You know,
I love that. I love my contract.
I'm one of the best wide receivers in the game,
top
bro.
Five, top three?
Yeah.
It's me, Chase Claypool, and Cooper Kupp. That's who it is.
Look what they paid me, son. Anyway, speaking of getting paid, remember last week? I think this was last Tuesday, the build-up to the U.S. Open. Brooks Koepka, my favorite golfer, was asked about whether or not he was going to join the LIV Tour, if he was distracted by it. And he had an interesting answer. Here is Brooks Koepka a week ago.
Why have you decided to stay on the PGA Tour, and is that a permanent decision?
I mean, there's been no other option to this point, so... Where else are you going to go?
LIV.
I mean, as of last week, that's it. I wasn't playing last week. So I'm here. I'm here at the U.S. Open. I'm ready to play the U.S. Open. So, and I think it kind of sucks, too. Y'all are throwing this black cloud over the U.S. Open. And, I mean, it's one of my favorite events. And I don't know why you guys keep doing that. But, you know, the more legs you give it, the more you keep talking about it.
Well, less than a week later... Four-time major champion Brooks Koepka is the latest golfer to defect from the PGA Tour to the LIV Golf Invitational Series per ESPN. He's one of the highest-profile players to join in this tournament. They are expected to announce the addition of Koepka in the coming days. Koepka is ranked 19th in the official world golf ranking. I like Koepka because he's a casual golfer.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing to say, but Koepka does not seem to really care about anything that isn't a major. Koepka also, at the same time, seems to hate anyone who is slow or annoying, like Bryson DeChambeau. And I'm trying to think of a reason that he might have left, Josh. One of them was that the wedding that he had, which looked really fun, was very expensive.
Yes, 100%.
The other is that he wants to join Bryson DeChambeau in a league where maybe he can just openly... clown on him over the course
and
of 18 holes.
Dominate it. Well, it's 100% the money. I mean, the money that these guys are getting to join LIV is insane. Dustin Johnson, I think, is like anywhere from $1.2 to $1.5 million. DeChambeau's around the $1 million range. When Phil finally signs, it's probably going to be somewhere around the $2 million range. So I can't imagine what Brooks Koepka's looking like. It's just such a bad look for him to be like, I don't know why you guys keep doing it. You're putting a black cloud. Like, I do love the, like, as of last week, no offers, wink, wink. Nothing's changed, winking at the cameras, trying to get Liv to come in there and spend that money. But it's 100% the money.
Do you think he put his index finger up and he was like, no offers yet? Also, do you think it's a little bit on the reporter asking him, giving it legs? Because it sounds like the reporter is what made him sign by asking him the question, giving these rumors legs.
She sounded like a plant with that question. Like, where would I go? Liv?
Liv.
Yeah. It's not. I mean, look. It's a good question. This I said this yesterday. While I don't love golf, I love drama. I like golf. Golf is fine. I'll watch it. I think it's entertaining to watch. I'm really, really bad at playing it, but I do enjoy watching it. I used to watch it growing up with my grandpa, so there's kind of like a little nostalgia thing to it for me. But I love drama, and this LIV versus PGA drama has been a lot of fun to follow. And it's interesting the way LIV is going with all the money that they've got backing them right now. The amount of money that's going into these pots.
Very clean money.
Yeah. the marketing push that they're doing right now is really geared towards and targeted towards a younger audience. It's geared towards these next group, these kids, these generations below us, for real. On God.
100.
Look, they're broadcasting on YouTube. They're broadcasting digitally. The stuff that they're doing, the way they're doing teams, I think it's fresh. I think it's new, and I think they market it the right way. And they pay these stars so much money to come and play for them. I think they could get anybody they want at this point.
I don't even judge. I think it was Charles Barkley who said one of the last couple of days that, like, you could pay him $100 million to kill a family member. I mean, if you're getting paid that kind of money, It's very easy to sit outside and say, well, where's that money coming from? I don't know. That's a lot.
See, like, Rory's just mad because nobody's asked him. Like, nobody's paying him money and nobody's asked him to join.
I bet they have. He has been very loyalist to it. And it's, you know, on brand for someone from Northern Ireland, seeing as they have a weird loyalty to England for no reason at all.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
That is a sticking point to me. I'm very happy that Rory didn't win entirely because he's from Northern Ireland. Is it an irrational hatred? Yes. But I don't like New York for no reason at all, essentially, other than that Boston sports teams, like, didn't like them growing up. I mean, that's it. That's who I am.
No cap, what do you think the price point for Rory would be? Everybody has a price. That's one thing I've learned in my life. Like you just said, everyone has a price.
I mean, what's crazy is, so Jack Nicklaus doesn't play anymore, and he apparently was offered $100 million, but he doesn't have control over his name, image, and likeness anymore. Right. So they didn't let him have it. Tiger Woods was supposedly offered in the high nine figures. And I don't know what's going on, Sean. Is something going on?
Yeah, apparently I just saw it on First Take that 20 of 24 Deshaun Watson cases have been settled.
Oh, you're seeing it on the TV. Okay, today I announced that all cases against Deshaun Watson, with the exception of four, have settled. We are working through the paperwork related to those settlements. Once we have done so, those particular cases will be dismissed. The terms and amounts of the settlements will not be disclosed. So 20 of 24 lawsuits against Deshaun Watson have been settled. Okay, well, that's what we're talking about right now, people. 713-780-3776. We'll get some more information for you on the other side. 713-780-ESPN. Deshaun Watson is starting to settle. Why is he settling now, especially when he was so adamant about his innocence? Has something else come out? Will we actually find out what comes out, or is it all going to be sealed? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more next. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.